Hello, this is Media Talk. On this week's podcast, Tablets of Stone, will Apple wipe the media slate clean with its new digital device? And from letterbox to widescreen, Adam Crozier is the new chief executive of ITV. And what a giveaway, The Guardian's editor makes the case for free. This is Media Talk from The Guardian. Now, we're often accused of being Apple fanboys here at The Guardian, so let's see if this is borne out by our panel. Janine Gibson is executive editor of Guardian.co.uk. What's your fruit of choice, Apple or BlackBerry?
Both. No. I'm not a fanboy.
No, you're a fangirl, aren't you? Yeah, absolutely. But given our lead story, I'm glad we have a wireless expert with us. It's our radio correspondent, John Plunkett. Hello.
Old school wireless. Hi there. Hi there.
Absolutely. Are you an Apple fan?
I am now. Recently converted.
A recent convert.
That's right.
What converted you?
Marrying my wife. She's a big Apple fan.
Excellent.
I buy the gadgets. She uses them.
Excellent. Let's start as we mean to go on with the dramatic news that a technology company have launched a new piece of technology. Steve Jobs put on his best roll neck jumper and unveiled the iPad, which he says will create a new market somewhere in between the smartphone and the laptop. Media companies are getting very excited about it because they think it will save their business model. Other people are excited about it because it looks pretty cool, and the Apple haters hate it. Here is Steve Jobs.
All of us use laptops and smartphones now. Everybody uses a laptop and/or a smartphone. And the question has arisen lately: is there room for a third category of device in the middle? Something that's between a laptop and a smartphone. And of course, we've pondered this question for years as well. The bar is pretty high. In order to really create a new category of devices, those devices are going to have to be far better at doing some key tasks. They're going to have to be far better at doing some really important things. Better than the laptop, better than the smartphone. The problem is, netbooks aren't better at anything. They're slow, they have low quality displays, and they run clunky old PC software. So they're not better than a laptop at anything, they're just cheaper. They're just cheap laptops. And we don't think that they're a third category device. But we think we've got something that is. And we'd like to show it to you today for the first time. And we call it the iPad.
Now, before we are accused of pandering to the Apple PR machine, here's a voice of skepticism. Matt Kelly is the digital content director at the Mirror Group, and he just doesn't buy the argument that the iPad is the saviour of print journalism online.
Well, two things. We're not struggling that much. I think we're probably able to get there without the particular assistance of Steve Jobs. But I don't think the iPad itself brings anything to the party except perhaps yet another layer of development necessity. So all these new formats for our content all require development and attention and editorial integrity applied to them. That has a cost to it. But the iPad in itself, I don't think it really does anything more than good browsing experience.
Is it just because it's Apple, then, that everyone gets excited about this? Because there are other devices that are quite similar to this already on the market, aren't there?
There are, and not performing spectacularly. So, yes, there is that Apple wow factor. And I think it certainly has that wow factor in terms of presentation. But if you and I were sitting down a week before launch and said, you know, what's it going to be? And we racked our brains, the least we'd come up with is it's going to be like a big iPhone. That would be our starting base. But it seems to me that Apple never actually got beyond that. It doesn't seem, I was hoping for some big bombshell, you know, and this thing can turn your kettle on while you're watching EastEnders or something useful. But there was nothing there.
So are we waiting then for something else, or should we just get on with the business of producing, you know, the best content on the platforms that are available?
Yes, we should carry on producing great content, because if that doesn't save us in the end, then we're really in trouble, because that's ultimately all we're really good at, is producing great content. So I think that's got a really high value to it, and the big challenge for us as newspaper publishers is managing to reconnect the investment we make with the reward we get online, however that reconnection happens. And I think we're in the grip of a bit of an economic perversity, if you like, that the people who invest the most online, people like newspapers and so on and so forth, are the least rewarded. And the people who invest the least, like aggregators and so on, are the best rewarded. Now, that's just wrong. I think the great thing Apple has shown us is a very elegant, frictionless, seamless and enjoyable payment process. And I think if we can, as an industry, get to the point where paying for content is not actually a hassle, that's the big hurdle we've got to get over to actually convince people to pay for the content.
Matt Kelly there, delving into the free versus pay argument towards the end, which we are going to come back to later. So let's drag it back to the iPad. Janine, what do we think? Is this a transformative moment?
Put aside for a moment this individual device, and I agree with Matt Kelly, it did look slightly like a teeny, teeny, tiny Steve Jobs holding up his enormous iPhone.
Dom Jolly digital style.
Hello, yeah. I'm on my iPad. Leaving aside that device, what they have done and why everybody gets so excited about a new Apple product launch is since the iPod, they have shown a direction of travel. So in the old sort of Darwinian thing that goes iPod, iPod Touch, iPhone, what they did was they created an expectation which transformed what that device had to be.
Yeah.
Whether it's an Apple One or a Windows One or a Linux or whatever, we now will expect touchscreen browsing. We will now expect an incredibly fluent, immersive experience in an e-book reader or a browsing device or whatever. Really, I don't know at the moment. Generally, I am the person who thinks I must have it as soon as I see something. An iPhone seemed to me a no-brainer in terms of the portability of multifunction. And that seems to be the schism around the iPad, is the difference.
It doesn't appear to be a no-brainer.
It is not a multifunction device. It doesn't add anything. It doesn't simplify what you have to carry around. It is basically a browser book reader.
John, do you get the sense that this time it's been, you know, they've overhyped it and we've overhyped it?
Well, I think the danger is that it falls between two stools. I don't think it's certainly not a replacement for a laptop computer or even a notebook. It doesn't have that kind of functionality. You wouldn't ditch your computer for an iPad, and you certainly wouldn't ditch your iPhone for an iPad because you'd be struggling to make a phone call on it. So I don't think it does either job very well. I think it's a curio, but from my initial reaction was it wouldn't be a must have. I think it's a I think people are perfectly happy to watch video and pictures on a 3.5-inch screen on the way to work now. They don't necessarily want to have a 10-inch version, and I wouldn't feel particularly comfy bringing it in from the crime hotspot of St Albans, somewhere slightly more dangerous. I think.
Well, you can't imagine, you know, you're pulling it out of your satchel on the Clapham Omnibus.
Yeah, I imagine it's not hugely robust. It doesn't do it for me.
This is first generation of an idea, and yes. And as I say, this is more likely to sort of set the tone, I think, than be the thing.
Yeah. As John was saying, you know, most people wait a while to see how it plays. And
yeah, I mean, never buy the first generation of any Apple product for a start. Yeah. First generation
usually doesn't work.
Do you remember them?
I think the most important thing for newspapers is using the iTunes model to buy content rather than using a Steve Jobs gadget to read content.
And that hasn't come up with this. You know, there was some sort of expectation that actually he might announce a deal with US newspaper publishers that, you know, that was a nice sort of iTunes for newspapers, and that didn't happen.
Penny 5p, 10p a story, whatever, and then you almost don't realise it going out of your account, like when you buy an app on an iPhone now. You're paying for something, but you don't really feel the pain because it goes straight out. And that hasn't happened yet, so I guess that's the next stage. And do we really want to browse a 10-inch screen in the way that we flip through a newspaper? I'm perfectly happy to click through it on a small screen. I don't want to drag and drop stories like that.
Yeah, although the browsing experience, people who have used it say the browsing experience is pretty damn good.
You see, this is okay. So Bobby Johnson was our techno correspondent who was there last night. He was blogging all the way through the launch, and you know, Bobby's just as much as an Apple fanboy or not as anybody else, I think. And he was sitting there being a bit puzzled about why you would want it all the way through, and you can see this is in his blog. And then afterwards, he clearly got to go and have a little go and turned around. I wouldn't say it was 180 degrees, but certainly 120 degrees.
Right, yes.
And into, oh no, this is just the best browsing experience ever. So I'm, you know, I'm fully prepared to believe that once they ship them to the UK, which is not in sight,
yes,
and you trundle down to the Apple store and have a little play, you might think, hooray. And I, you know, anybody would be foolish to ignore it. I mean, I imagine every media organisation in the world will now be looking at what do we develop for this kind of a device.
Yeah, well, that goes back to what Matt Kelly was saying, is that there's more tight. Every time a new device comes out, you've got to set up a little team to develop the stuff for that platform. And it's quite labour intensive, isn't it? Can be.
Well, yeah, but okay, but you end up building a really brilliant news app, and putting a revenue stream against it, and thinking, well, that was an experiment, but that's come out quite well.
Well, if Apple would like to,
that's
come
what big media companies are going to have to do.
Yeah, absolutely. If Apple would like to come and demonstrate their iPad here, I don't think we'd be turning them away, would we? What about the name, finally, John? iPad. There's been a lot of rude jokes made about this.
There has, yeah.
Do you have any to add?
No, I don't. Well, I know of. They're doing one for parents, which is iDad, and they're doing one for young men of a certain age, iLad.
Yeah.
And if you can't afford it, iSad. And I get my coat.
Not many women in the Apple naming department, as they were saying on Twitter last night.
Clearly not. Producer Pascal says he's wearing one at the moment. There's loads more on the iThing on our online tech pages. Go to guardian.co.uk/technology, where you can also watch that footage of Steve Jobs outlining the new launch.
Media Talk with Matt Wells on guardian.co.uk.
Later in the podcast, we'll go back to the issue of online news models. I know you can't get enough of it, with a speech by Alan Rusbridger. But first, the Media Guardian Big Cheese chart is complete. The final executive hole in British media was filled this week with the appointment of the Royal Mail boss, Adam Crozier, as the chief executive of ITV. It was a surprise appointment, which is what we always say in journalism when we didn't have a clue what was going on in the recruitment process. But can the man who steered Royal Mail at the time of the biggest crisis in its history be the right person to run ITV? Answers on a postcard, please. We'll come to his competence in a minute, but let's start at the beginning. Why Adam Crozier, Janine?
At this early stage, all we can assume is that the one degree of separation here is Alan Layton.
Oh, you better explain that.
Yes. I'm going to. Archie Norman is the new chairman of ITV, used to be the chairman of ASDA. As chairman of ASDA, he hired Alan Layton to be the chief executive of ASDA.
Right.
Then went on to do one of the biggest deals in certainly British retail industry history by selling ASDA to Walmart. And both went off into gloriously successful sort of portfolio career life. Alan Layton then ended up chairing Royal Mail, amongst other things, and hiring Adam Crozier, who is now the chief executive of ITV.
Right.
There's a little unit, it's the sort of ASDA mafia, who, given that, I mean, it's a long, much discussed trope on the business pages that there are only about three PLCs left on the UK stock market. And half the problem with Cadbury is it's one of the few remaining PLCs in the British industry. And then of those three PLCs, there are apparently only three people working for them. And they all used to work at ASDA and now half of them work at ITV.
Well, that explains a lot. So what does this mean for ITV then, John, if Janine's right, if it being fattened up for a sale or a breakup?
Well, I imagine staff there today are greeting it with some trepidation. I remember when Michael Grade joined, they got the bunting out, didn't they? And there was a sort of standing ovation in the main hall. I can't quite imagine Adam Crozier getting the same response.
No.
He walks in and finds bunting and tear it down, tell him to stop pissing about, get back to work.
does it matter, Janine, that he's not a TV man? You have two people at the top of ITV now are not TV men.
But they've had quite a lot of TV men running it for the last 5 years.
How's that
been going for you?
Yes, okay,
it's not been going that well, has it? No, I think Crozier and Archie have got a certain amount of luck on their side. You know, they've got Sky's got to get off their lawn. They have got enormous reputations. Archie certainly has an enormous reputation as a deal maker.
And the TV business is actually fine now, isn't it? The content is all right at the moment.
The ITV, I was hearing talk in the run-up to Christmas where people were saying, in that sort of controversialist way that the media loves, ITV's going to have the best year for the last 10 years. Because, really, they've found a format. We'll have reality TV on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, all weekend. They've got a World Cup. It's going to be a good year for them.
The buy up Celebrity Big Brother and they're there.
Yeah, absolutely. It'd be a good series so far.
I hesitate to say it, but reduced me to tears for different reasons to previous runs.
Absolutely. Now, Archie Norman, in his conference call to journalists just after the appointment was announced, John, was saying that the reason that they've appointed Adam Crozier, one of the big reasons, is that the thing with ITV is that they need to turn it into a fast, forward-thinking digital business. That's the bit of ITV that's not sorted yet. But I'm not entirely convinced that Adam Crozier's digital heritage is particularly good. I mean, he was in charge of a very old media business with Royal Mail.
He was Royal Mail. Then before that, he was at the Football Association. And before that, when he was his last media job, I guess, was joint chief executive of Saatchi & Saatchi. So is he the man to do that? I don't know. I mean, certainly Michael Grade wasn't. He was the classic kind of analog man in a digital age. But I mean, they got rid of Friends Reunited.
Yes,
I suppose
that was a start.
That's a start. But they didn't exactly make hay out of Susan Boyle on Britain's Got Talent of course, when they had all those hits on YouTube, and very little of it or none of it flowed back to ITV.
Janine, he's right. Arshin Norman is right that this is the bit of ITV that needs to be sorted. Is the digital income? What is ITV going to be in 5 years' time? They're saying that apparently, and I'm not an expert on the post office, I'm afraid, but there people who know more than me say that he was involved in the kind of digitisation of their business, but I don't see much evidence of that.
What we know about the post office, even those of us that know nothing about the post office, but what we know from other people tell us, is that the major fight with the union has been around modernisation and introducing new technology. He has proved himself, I suppose, as someone who isn't scared to challenge working practices and say, we are going to revolutionise, we're going to do this. Now, the unions would say that was just a euphemism and a way of, abolishing all our working conditions and cutting our numbers and making us work harder for less money. I just sort of think basically any sort of change has got to be good. You've got to get new blood into the executive team at ITV. You've got to get people who are not wedded to the old ways of doing things. You've got to get people in who will sit there and say, I don't really understand why I have 2,000 people producing X. If nothing
Explain
else,
to me why. Yes.
To ask the question.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely. And it does seem that Archie Norman has been going through the rather moribund ITV board with a dose of salts, hasn't he?
Yeah.
Of smelling salts, perhaps.
And also the key thing is to hold on to Peter Fincham, I think, going forward, and how he and Adam Crozier get on.
Yeah, that'll be interesting. We should just briefly mention the other slot in the Big Cheese chart, which was filled last week, but not quite in time for last week's podcast, Janine, which is the appointment of David Abraham as Chief Executive of Channel 4. Interesting?
Apart from all the lame jokes about Dave.
Yes, of course.
Enough. I do think it's quite interesting. I think Channel 4's going to have a really good year.
Right. Oh, right. Okay. Now we talk about being controversialist and turning things around. Well, it is.
Do you want to hear my theory? Okay.
Yes,
so this is my special theory, which you can all knock down.
Yeah.
All right. My special theory is Channel 4 has a good year in the year when it's got the cool import, and it has a bad year in the year when it hasn't got the cool import. It might not be fair. It's a very competitive market. Lots of people after the cool import. The US cool import.
Are you talking about Glee?
I am talking about Glee. That show is now doing 3.5 million aggregate audience per episode per week across E4. Channel 4 and 4OD. That's a lot by Channel 4 standards these days.
For an import as well.
A serious amount, and it's a serious amount for an import. And that's only on episode 4, and it's just won Emmy, Golden Globe, and it women like it. It's cross-generational. That's going to be very good for them. And it's just one of those things. Once they've got the hot import, they get the buzz, they get the word of mouth, everybody understands that's where they're supposed to be, it's territory they're supposed to occupy, you can sell other shows off the back of it. And in the years when they haven't got the cool import, when it's Lost or 24 or whatever, and they've lost it or never got it in the first place, just it saps away from them. The momentum goes elsewhere.
I think it's an unprovable theory. It's an interesting thing.
But I like
think
it.
It's certainly the case, John, that it does, taking Janine's theory on a bit, if they have got, I'm not convinced that it's about the cool import, but certainly the big talked about show, then Channel 4 does have a big year. And they've been really ground down by the bad publicity surrounding, let's face it, Big Brother, haven't they?
Glee, I don't know. Well, it's a big hit, as you say, on E4 and across those various different platforms. But will it transfer that appeal to Channel 4?
It's doing a million in the repeat showing on Channel 4.
All right. The brilliant thing about all your brilliant theories, Janine, is that they're all unprovable. So that's the...
That's part of the genius
of your
brilliant
success.
Theory.
Yeah.
Never get a brilliant theory that can be unprovable in less than 12 months.
Yes. Anything to add on either David Abrams or Adam Crozier?
Well, Adam Crozier, Janine sort of dismissed lame jokes, but I think she did that too early. So courtesy of Mrs. Whippy on the Media Guardian website today, come up with a rebranding for the ITV channels under Crozier. ITV1's going to be first class, ITV2 second class. ITV3 chucked it in the garage and spent the morning watching telly, and with due respect to my postman, and ITV4 has taken that birthday money from your nan, thanks.
Does it mean...
Well, no, you see, and
he's got those for free.
Because of David Abraham at Channel 4 and the new hit show with Glee 4.
Glee 4.
Glee
does
4.
Thank you very much.
Does it mean that we'll get all our programmes late and hardly ever at weekends?
That's right. I'm sorry you were out when we delivered our quality programmes.
Yeah, very good.
Thanks to Brian C for that one.
I was going
to
say...
Mock the week aren't worried, are they?
Copyright most of Twitter. All right. Thank you very much. Plenty more on Adam Crozier at mediaguardian.co.uk. Let's do a quick roundup for the rest of the week's media news. And John, Five Live presenters don't seem to be very keen to move to Manchester.
Good news is that the entire Five Live daytime lineup will be presenting from Salford when the station moves there next year. But possibly the bad news, you might think it's bad, is that none of the presenters, as far as we can tell, are actually going to live in the area full time, which struck me as
good news for Virgin Trains.
Very good news for Virgin Trains, yeah. But struck me as slightly made the whole thing slightly hollow. It would be nice if at least one of them had decided to move to the northwest. But controller Adrian Van Cleveren said that there was no requirement that anyone move there, which is possibly good news for him because he's not moving there either.
No, quite.
Isn't the whole point, sorry, yes. I'm naive, isn't the whole point to reflect the rest of the UK, not London, by moving the production base outside of London?
That's right.
That's correct.
Therefore, if the people that are making it don't want to live outside of London, well, we'll hire some new people who ideally don't live in London.
Well, this is the thing.
Really?
They are shifting their entire presentation base from London to Manchester. Most of the presenters don't want to move. They've got to do their shows from Salford, so they'll be up there during the week, but they'll come back. They won't live and be part of it. It's not the same, is it? Even if you live there for four or five days a week, it's not the same as living.
But even moving them seems to me against the point of the spirit of the exercise. It's a bit cynical to say, oh, we'll suddenly all go and live in Salford.
They could have at least hired one presenter from the northwest of England,
or
who we'd never heard of.
All of them.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, their argument is that this is a sort of a transition phase, and they want to make as little disruption to the schedule as possible as part of the move. But maybe you've got to do that.
It's just ridiculous. Back to the days where Jane Root used to get on the train every day.
Yeah, quite. The Daily Mail has announced that it's targeting women over 35 in a new marketing push. I hesitate to look at you, Janine.
Sorry.
I said are we not listening?
No.
The Daily Mail are targeting women over 35 in a new marketing push, and I hesitate to look at you, Janine, at this point.
When was the point when the Daily Mail wasn't targeting women over 35?
Well, no, they're going to spend a lot. They're going to spend They're going to spend a lot of money, aren't they, John?
They are. I can tell you, they're going to spend.
Yeah, John's the reporter here. He's got the facts.
Come on, John, sell it to me.
Well, I'm not reading this. They're going to spend £10 million on an ad campaign with a blitz of 6 different TV commercials.
Yeah.
And in the past, they rely on DVDs and other kinds of promotions, but now they're going for a big TV
branding.
Ad campaign.
Branding, yeah, that's right. Because they don't normally do branding ads.
Yeah, and branding the particular section, so you've got female and all sorts.
And what's going to be their angle on female? Is it going to be, do you need to read more about celebrity cellulite?
Well, the image I'm looking at here is very clever. It's a stiletto heel with a lipstick instead of a heel. So,
so it's quite clear then, yeah.
Yeah,
great.
That seems very 80s.
It has gone...
And impractical.
Yeah, very impractical. John, Prince Charles has been attacking ITV. I'm sure Adam Crozier will be appalled at this, for axing the South Bank show.
Yes. He said that the arts shouldn't be consigned to the oblivion, which I think we all agree with.
Yes.
I don't know if they'll have a massive impact on the ITV share price or Crozier's strategy when he arrives. But I think he's got a good point. It's a very sad day to see the South Bank show. Not that I've watched it for several years,
this
I confess.
The thing that always happens. We all say, oh, it's terrible that they're back to the South Bank show, but none of us have ever watched it.
I take the one about Coldplay, then.
Did you?
The Sky plan got full up, so it had to go. But the intent was there.
ITV won't take a blind bit of notice, will they?
No.
Okay. And finally in this section, Sky has announced record revenues with customer base almost pushing up to 10 million and revenues up 10%. They've announced the launch of their 3D service. Sky, I mean, they're the... You know, in the midst of a recession, they're the beacon of hope, aren't they, for the British media industry?
Yeah, well, it's the old Domino's pizza. There are a certain number of companies that perform well in a recession because we don't go out, and so we order in pizza and we watch Sky. And they also are increasing their ARPU, though. The average revenue per user. You know what ARPU is.
I didn't know what ARPU was.
Of course. How long have you written about the media?
Well, I haven't written about the media for years.
If you cannot go to Sky Results without some bugger bollocking on about ARPU.
the
average revenue per user, which is the amount that they scam out of you on pay-per-view movies or whatever, in addition to the amount that you pay in subscription.
I see.
And that's because of HD, which is they've managed to flog quite successfully across their customer base.
Yeah, to about a million people. Yeah, and also, go on.
The new thing is 3D.
Which they're going to be trialling.
And trialling this weekend, I believe, by showing a football match in, I think it's 9 pubs around the country. So you can go and watch the football in 3D.
Yeah, that's not good. You don't want to get drunk and watch through the 3D, though, do you? I mean, that's can you imagine the experience, John? You've been just tottering around the floor.
I don't get that. I spent all these years selling you flat screen TVs, they introduced 3D. Is that a contradiction? Also, multi-room, of course, is a big, I imagine it's a big revenue earning for Sky, and also Sky Plus, of course.
The interesting thing about 3D, of course, is it's much harder to copy a 3D signal and
hack it
out over the interweb and download it.
Okay, that's interesting.
Not much fun watching 3D if you already wear glasses. You look twice as stupid.
You would. Thank you very much. Links to all those stories at mediaguardian.co.uk. Let's end, in a sense, where we began, with a speech given by our great leader, otherwise known as Alan Rusbridger, to an audience in London this week. He was giving the annual Hugh Cudlip lecture. Previous speakers include Rebecca Brooks and Paul Dacre. This one was a multimedia affair with embedded video and everything. With news organisations around the world desperate to start charging for their content online, as we were hearing from Matt Kelly earlier on, Mr Rusbridger outlined an alternative view. In an era where the web is opening up, he argued that news organisations should go with the flow.
Governments are freeing up their data, records and information. Museums and galleries are throwing open their doors. NGOs and charities are becoming publishers. Universities are opening their lecture halls. Scientists and corporations are sharing knowledge in ways which would have been unimaginable even 10 years ago. And then there's Google, with its ambition to digitize and organize all human knowledge since time began. Mention Google and we think of China. The spread of disorganized information is balanced by the organized disinformation and censorship. We can't yet know who will win, but we know which side we must be fighting on. So where do news organizations think they fit into all this? Are we in or are we out? Or are we only in if we can make it pay in the immediate future? I try to imagine The Guardian deciding it doesn't want openly to be part of this world I've just described, and I struggle.
He concluded with a rallying call to those news organisations who wanted to be a part of, not shut off from, the web.
Let's not leave the field so that the digital unbundlers can come in, dismantle and loot what we've built up, including our audiences and readers. Comment is free, publish and be damned. Fleet Street is the birthplace of the tradition of a free press that spread around the world. There's now an irreversible trend in society which rather inspiringly continues what we as an industry started here in newspapers in the UK in the 17th, 18th and 19th centuries. It's not a digital trend, that's just shorthand. It's a trend about how people are expressing themselves, about how societies will choose to organize themselves, about a new democracy of ideas and information, about changing notions of authority, about the releasing of individual creativity, about an ability to hear previously unheard voices, about respecting and including and harnessing the views of others, about resisting the people who want to close down free speech. As Scott said 90 years ago, what a chance for the newspaper. If we turn our back on all this and at the same time conclude that there's nothing to be learned from it because what they do is different, we're journalists, they aren't. We do journalists, they don't. Then never mind business models, we'll be sleepwalking into oblivion.
Alan Rusbridger there. Briefly, you like me were in the audience. It's good to hear, it has to be said, someone put out the full unexpurgated and in-depth case for free as against the Murdoch case for pay.
I mean, obviously, I agree, or I'm in the wrong place. But it is interesting how much of the last year we have spent listening to variations on an argument for pay, which has started to sound like basically inevitable. If you only listen to sort of Rupert Murdoch, then now the New York Times, and the sort of multiplicity of voices going on and on and on about putting up paywalls, the damaging state of the BBC, and how it is inevitable that people must pay for the cost of production around news, you would think that there was just no other voice out there, that all that was just a matter of time. Hmm. And actually, when you look at it the other way around, where you don't start from the revenue, where you start from the journalism, and you start to say, what does this technology do for the way we create news, for the way other people create news, and how we can do it together, and what this means for citizenship, for democracy, for content, for involvement, Alan calls it mutualisation, then there's just you wouldn't even consider putting a wall up around your content. Mm. Of course you wouldn't. It's just not where you would begin. I think even sceptics in the audience who still sort of sit there and go, well, how are you going to pay for it, found that argument pretty persuasive.
All right. Thank you very much to both of you. That's it for Media Talk this week. John, do you have anything to add before we go? Is there anything that you found out that you think should be imparted to Media Talk listeners?
I need a new box set suggestion because I've devoured 5 series of The Wire in a couple of weeks. So I'm looking to my next Glee. I gave it 5 minutes.
Glee.
I ran screaming from the room.
No, well, I tell you, my favourite programme at the moment is Being Human.
So I've never seen it.
Fantastic. Really, really good. Are you into
I'm only watching Glee.
Vampires and
No, I'm only
werewolves?
Watching Glee.
No?
Okay. Only watching Glee.
All right.
Every night. Just watch it every night.
No wonder it's getting so many viewings.
It's all Janine Gibson. All right. Thank you very much to panellists Janine Gibson and John Plunkett, to producer Pascal Wise. I'm Matt Wells. See you next time.